Together again, you and I chatting it up Monday style, October 27th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I kicked off a new week of shows wondering if either side in Congress is willing to see SNAP food benefits stop on November 1st because of the ongoing government shutdown. CBS News reporter Olivia Rinaldi joined us live from D.C. with the latest on that shutdown. National Taxpayers Union Senior Director of Governmental Affairs Thomas Aiello dropped by to explain a Trump White House plan to possibly hit some generic medications with high import tariffs. And finally, Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill joined us with his thoughts on the big stories and what was a big story back then in the Clinton White House that seems so innocent today.
All right, listen, credit where credit is due, and I'll always do that, right? Listen, as rock-headed as I can be sometimes, I will give credit where credit is due. And Connecticut U.S. Senator, Junior Senator Chris Murphy was on CNN yesterday on CNN State of the Union with Jake Tapper. We'll have some segments of that momentarily. And he admitted it. He finally admitted it. It is the Democrats in the Senate that are keeping the government closed. It's not the House Republicans. It's not the Republicans in the Senate. Chris Murphy admitted yesterday on national television, on national cable television. Chris Murphy said, and I'll have segments to prove this, to back it up in just a minute here. Chris Murphy said, it is the Democrats that may cause millions of people not to eat come this Saturday. It is the Democratic Party. Chris Murphy, Dick Blumenthal, and the other Democrats, he admitted it. In Washington, that may cause 436,000 people in Connecticut who get SNAP benefits to maybe not get them if they don't blink coming up this Saturday, the 1st of November. Don't give me this, well, you're just being partisan because they're Democrats. No, they admitted it. It's so bad now, the biggest federal union in Washington, D.C. came out earlier today and called on both sides, that means the Republicans and the Democrats, called on both sides to agree on a clean CR. That's a clean continuing resolution. That means with no other stuff attached to it, reopen the government. Do you think most of those union members in that union, I'll have that story in just a second, it broke earlier today. Do you think those union members are Democrats or Republicans? What party do you think they vote for? Who do you think they voted for by a majority? There's no way to know, obviously, but my guess is there's a lot of Democrats and progressives and liberals in that union who are telling the people that represent most of them, not all of them, most of them, get your asses in gear, stop playing around with SNAP benefits, and reopen the government, which could happen in a couple of hours. But for some reason, Chris Murphy and Richard Blumenthal and everybody with a D next to their names in the Senate, with the exception of John Fetterman, Angus King, Catherine Cortez Masto, and a few others, they want to play games. They want to play let's get Trump. And at least up to now, they're not blinking. They would rather see people not eat so they could go after Trump. I'm sorry if you don't like this, but this is the only thing I can think here. And now you have one of the largest, instead of, if not, the largest union in Washington, D.C., saying, come on, guys, come on, gals, open up the government and then argue what you want to argue about health cares and subsidies for the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare. This is a continuing temper tantrum against Trump. That's all this is. This keeping the government closed. And by the way, not even with food stamps we're worried about. We're starting to hear, and you heard it over the weekend, Hey, how about along with, I guess, being okay if people don't eat for Mr. Blumenthal and Mr. Murphy, I guess they want tired air traffic controllers, too. That's a great idea. Hey, how good is that? It is mind-numbing that we're at this point. And then you'll hear the complaint coming up. And again, I have this audio. I'll play it for you after the break. You're going to hear this this whining from Chris Murphy coming up. Well, you know, when Joe Biden was in office, okay, Chris, guess what? Joe Biden ain't in office anymore. Hello? Joe Biden, God bless him. He's not, you know, he's battling cancer. He got an award over the weekend connected to the Ted Kennedy Senate Institute or whatever that is in Boston. Good for him. But Chris Murphy actually put that out there yesterday on national television. He sounded like a fool. Well, you know, when we worked so much better together when Joe Biden was in office. Okay, Senator, with all due respect, that's in the history books. That was then, this is now. You've got a major union now of federal workers saying, just reopen the government and then argue about what you want to argue about, and we'll cheer one side or the other. Now, you're probably saying, oh, Paul, I don't believe all this stuff you say Chris Murphy said yesterday. Okay, then. Buckle up, get the popcorn and the soda, diet for me, Diet Coke, thank you, or the adult beverage, and you'll hear this from Chris Murphy coming right up. So now I guess it's clear to understand that Dick Blumenthal and Chris Murphy are okay with tired air traffic controllers and are okay with the possibility of people not being able to eat come Saturday. Now, again, if the government shutdown doesn't end, there's no funding for SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, used to be called food stamps. I was thinking driving in today about all the actual physical food stamps we handled in my father's store. We used to have a sign out in front, we accept food stamps, food coupons. My father explained to me, hey, this is just like money. You treat it just like money. Some people get assistance so they could eat. I said, okay, whatever. 436,000 people in Connecticut are on some sort of food stamp assistance. In other words, they get the SNAP card, the benefit card, and I guess that recharges every month or it's renewed every month, and there you go. Nationally, 12.3% of all people in this country, it's a lot, double digits, 12.3% of people are on food stamps. It's 41.7 million, not food stamps, I'm sorry. SNAP benefits. Okay? Now, that's going to not end permanently, obviously, but that could stop come this Saturday, November 1st, if the government shutdown doesn't stop. 436,000 people in Connecticut. So that's basically one out of eight people in this state. Again, about 12% or so, if I'm doing the rough math in my head. So what am I driving at here? Well, Chris Murphy went on national television over the weekend. I started seeing this mentioned in the Capitol Report, said, okay, let me go check this out, make sure it's a legitimate video. Yes and yes. So here is segment one. Got three segments for you here, unless you think, well, you're just a right-winger, Paul. Oh, no, 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 no. This is what Chris Murphy said. Number one, you'll hear Jake Tapper say, hey, Senator, the White House is saying just sign a clean CR and everybody will be happy and everybody can eat. So here is segment one, Chris Murphy, CNN State of the Union this past Sunday.
Let's turn to the government shutdown. Funding for food stamps is expected to run out at the end of this week. This is happening because Democrats have not agreed to vote to fund the government without the Republicans making concessions to seriously change healthcare policy. So,
oh, by the way, I want to start this again and note that, now they're starting to feel the heat because you notice Jake Tapper there said, well, it's happening because Democrats, including Murphy and Richard Blumenthal, there are some people, Fetterman's got his head straight on this. But, you know, Even Jake Tapper is saying, well, it's the Democrats that are causing this. They're voting no.
Let's turn to the government shutdown. Funding for food stamps is expected to run out at the end of this week. This is happening because Democrats have not agreed to vote to fund the government without the Republicans making concessions to seriously change health care policy. So is this a trade-off you're willing to make and continue to make, letting some Americans go hungry until these Obamacare subsidies get extended?
Excellent question by Jake Tapper.
Well, let's be clear. We're shut down right now because Republicans are refusing to even talk to Democrats about a bipartisan budget bill. As you know, the reason that we didn't shut down for 4 years when Joe Biden was president was because Democrats negotiated with Republicans. And every single one of those short-term or long-term funding bills included both Democratic and Republican priorities. So the government is shut down because Republicans have done something unprecedented. They have refused to talk to Democrats about a bipartisan budget. Yes, we have priorities, just like they do. Ooh. One of our priorities is pretty simple, making sure that premiums don't go up by 75% on 22 million families this fall. Now, the reality is if they sat down to try to negotiate, we could probably come up with something pretty quickly. The president just announced $20 billion going to bail out the Argentinian economy. For $20 billion, we could open the government back up. That's enough money to relieve a lot of pressure of these premium increases. So we could get this deal done in a day if the president was in D.C. rather than being overseas. We could open up the government on Tuesday or Wednesday, and there wouldn't be any crisis in the food stamp program.
All right, so he admits it. Chris Murphy admits it right there. Oh, you know, but during the Joe Biden years, Chris, Senator, sir, with all due respect, Joe Biden ain't in the big chair anymore. God bless him. He has his own challenges now. And we pray for him, honestly. So Chris Murphy just admitted it. They're using this for leverage. The fact that a lot of, air traffic controllers aren't getting paid. And people could not be able to eat on Saturday. And even Jake Tapper smells BS here. He's saying, hey, you won't agree with the Republicans to open the government. And Chris Murphy comes out and says, well, we have our priorities. I guess air traffic controllers being overworked and people not eating, I guess that's a priority then, Senator, isn't it? I don't know. You tell me. So now here's segment two of three. Segment two. Jake Tapper says, hey, wait a minute. John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader there, pretty nice guy. He has said just open the government here and we'll work on it.
The leader of the Senate, John Thune, has said that he offered to Democrats a commitment to vote on extending the Obamacare subsidies at a date certain. But Democrats won't take yes for an answer.
And he's thinking, and?
Yeah, but that doesn't help anybody in my state because all these Republicans are going to vote against it. I mean, this is like real life, right? This isn't a game. In Connecticut, if you're 60 years old and making somewhere around $60,000, you could be seeing a $25,000 increase in your premiums. Not 25%, $25,000. Mm-hmm. So we don't need a commitment for a vote that fails. We need Republicans to come to the table and say, we're going to fix this problem. We're not asking for much here. We're not asking to fix the entirety of the healthcare system. We're just saying, let's take a piece of the damage that you did with the big, beautiful bill, just a piece of the damage, and let's fix it so that this fall, as prices on beef and school supplies and car repairs are going through the roof, families don't also have to pay these enormous increases in healthcare premiums. I don't think we're asking too much. I don't think we're being unreasonable. I don't think we're being any more unreasonable than Republicans were when they asked to have some of their priorities funded in budgets written when Democrats were in control.
Yeah, but guess what, Senator? In case you haven't noticed, your party is not in control right now. And he says, well, Democrats have priorities. Okay. So I guess, though, to push those priorities, you'd rather people be hungry come Saturday. Or you'd rather this week unpaid, burned out, tired air traffic controllers log into work. I mean, folks, he's showing his cards right there. Yeah. Hey, look, when even Jake Tapper on CNN, not the most conservative guy on God's green earth, comes out there and says, well, you know, SNAP benefits. Oh, yeah, but, you know, Trump. See, again, folks, I'm telling you, there are reports. I'm telling you, Chuck Schumer's not this dumb. This is the progressive wing of the party. This is Chris Murphy. This is AOC. This is Bernie Sanders saying, hey, let's draw the line now, even though it has to do with SNAP benefits, because if we don't, Trump's going to steamroll us here, as he has been. Now, by the way, before we go to a break, and I have segment three coming up, we'll go to Joe in Fairfield momentarily. Who's going to blink in this first? That's our question of the day. With SNAP benefits set to stop this Saturday for folks here in Connecticut and nationally, which side is going to blink in the ongoing government shutdown? So as we've been mentioning, somewhere between 300,000 and 400,000 people in Connecticut get SNAP benefits. Is that going to run out? Starting on Saturday morning, November 1st, joining us again, CBS News reporter Olivia Rinaldi, who is covering this government shutdown in D.C. Olivia, good afternoon. And now we have a deadline coming up. And I wondered, first part of the show today, Olivia, is either side going to blink here, even with the prospect of, you know, people not being able to eat? What's up?
Hey, Paul. Yeah, I mean, those numbers that you just said were stunning, the amount of people in Connecticut who are on those food stamp benefits. The U.S. Department of Agriculture now says that money is going to run out on Saturday, November 1st, meaning that nearly 40 million Americans are not going to be able to have the extra food assistance they need to be able to feed their families. Most of the people who are on SNAP are parents, are able-bodied working people who have children. So this is going to be a huge issue come Saturday. And I'm up here on Capitol Hill today, and let me tell you, it's kind of quiet. The Senate is back in session, but the House is nowhere to be found. This is now day 38 that the House is not in session, not, you know, appropriating bills. They say that they have passed what they've needed to. It's up to Democrats in the Senate to get the government funding passed. But we're reaching this really critical point where Americans are starting to feel the squeeze. Airdrop controllers are not being paid. Members of the military may not be paid this weekend. People on food benefits are going to run out of money. It's hitting the point now where this is getting very, very critical. So there's been no movement, though. No conversations happening between Senate Democrats and Senate Republicans to try to reopen the government. And it's becoming an interesting math game because we're talking about these 40 million Americans, mm-hmm. plus service members, plus airdrop controllers who are all not getting paid, who are struggling through this. And Senate Democrats are holding out for about 22 million Americans who are going to see their health care premiums skyrocket because these tax credits won't get passed. Well, so what's the benefit there, right? If you're hurting more than 40 million people, but 22 million people are going to feel the squeeze on their health care benefits, you know, who's hurting the most, right? So it's almost going to become a calculus of that starting this weekend, especially as we're in day 27, day 28. The last and longest government shutdown was 35 days. So looks like they might blow through that record.
Wow.
But certainly a lot of people are going to feel the pain in the meantime.
Yeah, Olivia, you're right. It does sound quiet behind you there. Olivia Rinaldi, CBS News, live from D.C. Olivia, thank you as always. We appreciate it. Take care.
Take care.
Appreciate it. There you go. All right. The last thing some people need or want are more expensive pharmaceuticals. Especially if you're paying completely out of pocket. Some stuff is cheap enough to do that. Others, though, no way. I mean, just one I take a month is my deductible is $25 a month, and out of pocket it would cost me $750 a month. So nobody wants to do that. So what's up with these rumblings here about tariffs on pharmaceuticals? National Taxpayers Union Senior Director of Government Affairs, Thomas Aiello, joining us to talk about this. Hey, Tom, it's Paul here in Connecticut. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Tariffs on medications, Tom? What? Now, I saw rumblings about this like about 6 or 8 months ago. Then I didn't see anything about it. What's going on here?
Yeah, you know, like a graveyard, bad ideas and zombies, they never go away. They always come back.
Yeah.
The administration, they're looking at investigating pharmaceutical companies and imposing potentially as high as 100% tariff on generic drugs that come into the United States. And look, it's a really bad idea. The cost of healthcare is already astronomical. You laid it out in your intro. People are getting their premium increases right now. People are going to be paying significantly more money every month in their premiums. We should be finding ways to bring down the cost of healthcare. Tariffs, they're going to make healthcare that much more expensive, and it's going to cost things more. We need to bring prices down. This is not one way to do it.
So is this, Tom, the usual Trump playbook page of saying, hey, I'm going to make it so onerous to import these things that these companies will run the numbers and make them here? Is that what the goal is here or not?
You know, that seems to be the president's playbook, where he'll propose these tariffs, make it seem like it's propose all these tariffs, try and encourage companies to come back to the United States. But look, I'm a free market guy, limited government guy. I don't think we should be using the threat of taxes as a way to bring businesses to the United States to produce more, whether it's widgets, steel, pharmaceuticals. I think what the president can do is three things that would actually make an immediate difference to increase American manufacturing. One, energy dominance, right? Factories require a lot of electricity.
Yeah.
He's right that we need to produce more oil and gas to fuel our factories and our cars and everything else. We could produce more energy in the United States, bring costs down for factories. Two, tax certainty. He passed the largest tax cut in American history, a lot of really good pro-business deductions and policies in his One Big Beautiful Bill. That's going to spur manufacturing. And three, permitting reform. It takes way too long for states and federal governments to approve factories in the United States. Let's cut the red tape and allow all of these products to roll off the line at a much quicker pace than they are now.
Yeah, one thing, Tom, and the guest is Tom Aiello, National Taxpayers Union Senior Director of Government Affairs. I've always wondered, Tom, and I have no experience in any sort of manufacturing. I can hardly manufacture a sandwich. But having said that, I wonder, and I say, is it that onerous for these maybe overseas companies or even some of the big mega drug companies that are here to just do this stuff in the U.S.? Is it a cost thing? Is it a tax thing? You just highlighted some things, but it's disappointing that we would rather get this stuff either from a cost perspective or from a, listen, national security perspective. These things could come into our country spiked here. I am distressed that we never seem to really, as you said, do what we should do to make that more of a possibility.
Yeah, and I think the president's exactly right that we can and we should produce more in the United States. I just don't think tariffs are an effective way to get there. Because when you impose a tariff on generic drugs, or as the president's looking into right now, imposing tariffs on medical equipment, like, you know, pacemakers and hearing aids, things people actually rely on, at the end of the day, it's not foreign countries that are going to be paying the cost of these tariffs. It's going to be the importers. So when they roll off the cargo ship at the port of Los Angeles or the port of New York, they have to pay the tax. But they're not going to pay the tax because they're going to pass it along to hospitals. Hospitals aren't going to eat that cost. Hospitals are going to pass it along to insurance companies. And insurance companies are going to pass it along to patients in the form of higher premiums. And unfortunately, consumers don't have anyone to pass that tariff along to. They are the ones that will ultimately pay the cost. So when we talk about should we bring jobs back here, absolutely. How do we get that? I laid out a few examples for how we can get there. Tariffs, at the end of the day, they cost consumers a lot of money. There was a study earlier this year that said new tariffs on medical equipment are going to cost $63 billion a year. Right. And I said, that's not money that the importer is going to pay or the hospital. It's going to be consumers. Healthcare prices, they're already through the roof. Let's not add more trouble to what consumers are already going through.
And the other thing is, Tom, and Tom Aiello is the guest from the National Taxpayers Union. You can force companies or try and force companies all you want to move operations here. But let's face it, Tom, you and I know whether it's widgets or phones or drugs, generic or first line drugs, whatever, you know, some of these countries have this manufacturing. Why? Because the wage scale is so much less here. So sometimes I find it pie in the sky, Tom. Now, sometimes it does work for some businesses and industries, and it doesn't, to automatically think companies are going to want to move their operations here and then have to pay, you know, American salaries with this. And we already see that with the controversy in these HB1 visas here.
Yeah, and that's economics 101. The United States, we don't need to produce every single thing. It's okay to import things where it's extremely affordable and accessible. You know, one of these, what the Commerce Department is looking into is the tariff on medical devices. That would include gloves and masks and hospital gowns.
Sure.
Maybe we can produce those here at an affordable cost, but in many cases, it's actually so much cheaper to import them, and it frees up American workers to do other things, and that's okay. Like I said, we don't need to produce everything under the sun in the United States. Yes, we can and we should produce more, but we don't need to, you know, produce things at a more expensive cost when we can look to alternative options to keep things affordable. So, you know, Americans might say, why can't we produce more? Well, we should, but in some cases, if we want all these goods to be affordable, then we can't just look at the United States to solve all of the problems here.
Yep, the National Taxpayers Union website is N as in Nancy, NTU.org. Thomas Aiello is the Senior Director of Government Affairs for the National Taxpayers Union. Hey, Tom, thanks. Pleasure to speak with you. I'm sure we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There you go. This gentleman, however, is often a voice of sanity. Terry Cowgill from Substack.com, Red Meat from Mushy Moderates, and the Connecticut News Junkie. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon. What is on your mind today, sir?
Well, I'm thinking that the sword of Damocles is a really hard act to follow.
Terry, I swear to God, the last time I heard that mentioned in a radio context, I was covering something like 30 years ago, and somebody was mad at some public official for not doing anything, and he wished the sword of Damocles. There you go.
Yeah, and you know, if you're in a position of power, you can always use the sword of Damocles as your defense. You know, things aren't great at the top. There's lots of risks. It's dangerous. People will be plotting against you.
Yeah.
But I'm not paranoid.
Yeah. Good. Good. That's good. Always good.
Yeah.
So as our present, the situation of the present world, the present, the nation, Terry, what have you been musing about?
You know, I was looking around in the internet for something to write about.
Yeah.
And, I stumbled upon this. It was a piece on, the first, scandal of the Clinton White House.
Okay.
You know, and I'm thinking, well, this is interesting because, you know, we're embroiled in so many different scandals right now that it's hard to keep track of them.
Yeah.
But this was the first one. It was called the White House Travel Office.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Oh, my God. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what did it involve, really? Well, the Clintons came in to the White House. And they fired the entire, this is early in their administration, they fired the entire White House travel operation, travel staff.
92.
It was about, well, it would have been 93. It was probably, you know, spring of 93. And so they fired, and it was a total of like five, maybe eight at the most employees.
Yep.
And people were outraged at this. And it got heavy media attention.
Uh-huh.
People were calling the Clintons, you know, saying that they were coming in there with a wrecking ball and they were going to knock everything over. And the allegations were that they had fired the travel office so that they could put their cronies from Arkansas in charge of the White House travel office.
Yeah.
So what happened? a special counsel was appointed.
Yes.
There were investigations by the Justice Department, the FBI, even ultimately the White House special counsel, Ken Starr. You probably remember that name.
Yeah.
He got involved. And all these people, and there was this huge controversy and outrage over firing eight people in the White House travel office. Now, look at what we've got so many scandals right now that it just makes your head spin. You can't even keep track of them because there's a different one every day. And it's almost as if Donald Trump is purposely inventing new scandals to take our minds off of the previous scandal.
I don't know whether he's inventing scandals, Terry, as it is, though. And I've said on this show, I think he's a boxer that doesn't want to dance for two or three rounds. And you and I are old boxing guys, obviously, of that age.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't want to stick and move. He from the opening bell, Terry, it's about body shots. He just goes in there, and he doesn't stop. He doesn't stop.
Right. And the rest of us we either get pummeled or we can play Muhammad Ali and do the rope-a-dope.
Yeah. You know?
Now, I do recall that. But Steve Bannon, his, confidant and who worked for Trump for many years.
Yeah.
Has famously said that you can flood the zone with excrement, or the word that begins with S, that's a common term for that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, everything, if you flood it like that, then everything becomes a scandal. And if everything's a scandal, then nothing is a scandal.
Exactly. Terry, thank you, because I have said this in all my years I do radio. If everything is either racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, then nothing is. You overuse everything, and it just numbs people after a while. And I just think people are like, right now, whatever. I think they're looking to the other side now, Terry, to the Democrats. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's Chris Murphy. Maybe it's Gavin Newsom, who has great hair. If only he should run for his hair. I think they're just looking for, all right, give me something better. Give me something new. You know what I mean?
Yes. No, absolutely. And he will give us something new, because every day there's something. And the latest, of course, the White House and the demolition of the East Wing to make room for a ballroom.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of outrage on this, and I'm not happy about it myself. But in the scheme of things, this is not much when you consider all the other problems he had. And if he weren't president, he could possibly be prosecuted for in a court of law. But, of course, he has immunity from most of the things that he does as president.
Yeah.
And also there's a long-standing Justice Department prohibition against prosecuting a sitting president. So, these are amazing times we live in. And I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of time yesterday with my 1.5-year-old grandson.
Excellent.
And I'm sure I will be telling this. I will be telling him about this in 10 years, and he'll be like, what,
Grandpa? Really?
Went through that?
Hey, real quick, Terry, in about 30 seconds, who blinks first on this government shutdown thing? That's my question of the day on Facebook. What's your gut feeling tell you on this?
I think the Democrats blink, because essentially, I mean, they're saying that basically, we don't want these subsidies to Obamacare to end that were created during the pandemic, because it's going to hurt a lot of people, and it will. But I suspect they'll find a way to fix this. They might be able to draw up some kind of a deal where they can agree to open up the government again and then go back and fix some of this stuff. But Donald Trump should be involved, because, as you know, there was that clip of him 15 years ago, I believe it was during the Obama administration, in which he said the president has to take the lead on this. He likes making deals. Currently, he's more interested in making deals overseas. Mm. But he ought to come back here and make a deal on this. And I can tell you one more thing.
Yeah.
I'll end it with this. If Congress were not paid during a government shutdown, the government would not shut down.
And Terry,
that simple.
That's exactly what one of my callers said earlier. Terry Cowgill, yep. ConnecticutNewsJunkie.com and Substack.com, red meat for Mushy moderates. All right, Terry, I've written it down on the prediction column, and we'll chat about it next time, okay?
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate it.